had to wait for my cap to go on. It's on speed. Okay. Let's call this meeting to order. Welcome to the Oceano Community Services District Board meeting for February 10th at 6:30. Soya, can I ask you for a roll call vote, please?
Director Angelou?
Here.
Director Blackburn?
Here.
Director Guerrero?
Here.
Vice President White?
Here.
President Lucy?
Here. Karen, can I ask you again for a flag salute?
Attention, salute.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right. It's going to be a relatively quick meeting tonight. Mr. Ogren is not with us tonight, so is there any agenda reviews?
I'll move to approve as presented.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Let's move into public comment. Jocelyn, why don't you do it, your piece into this? Thanks for coming tonight. Sorry it's such a packed house.
Yeah. That's okay. This is much better.
It's much nicer.
Yeah. Much nicer.
Did you come from the Coastal Commission today?
No.
Oh, okay.
But we've had the Phillips
66.
Pretty much overtake our county government building.
Oh, that's nice.
All Thursday and Friday, so.
Well, we're a kindler, gentler meeting.
Okay. So. Well, I think it did go very well.
Oh, nice.
When you consider we'd never had a hearing of that sort at the county before, and all the people, they were very respectful. We didn't have to call Sheriff Civil or anything, so it was
That's
great. So anyways, the reason that I'm here, for those of you who I think I've met everyone, but I'm Jocelyn. I am Supervisor Lynn Compton's legislative assistant, and I'm here for her tonight. She's actually out of town. So I had spoken with Pavo, and he asked me to just sort of come and give an update on what's going on with the homeless. I know that it's a big issue here in Oceano, and there's not a week goes by that I'm not dealing with it in some way, shape, or form. So you might have recently heard in the news some things going on at the county, so I just wanted to give you a little background information. I'll try and be really brief, and then if you have any questions, feel free to ask me afterwards. It's been a beautiful week this week, but as you know, we had some storms, and we had a lot of wet weather and some cold temperatures, some cold nights. So I just want to give you an update on what's going on as far as warming centers and shelters. And then I will let the Sheriff's Department talk about what we've cleared out and what we have to do to clear out encampments, because that's mostly been in Oceano. So the Five Cities Homeless Coalition does have a warming center at the Department of Social Services on Grand. It's actually in Arroyo Grande. When it's wet or below between 30 and 40 degrees, they will open that up. There's the Prado Day Center, of course, in San Luis Obispo that's being built. That's going to be a big homeless services center, basically, for our county. There is the Atascadero First Assembly Church that has a warming center, which accommodates 15 to 20. Atascadero Bible has one only on Sundays. I'm giving you this background so you can kind of think about what's going on throughout the whole county. Paso Cares has a warming center that rotates amongst churches. There's also an overflow from the Maxine Lewis shelter in SLO that rotates amongst churches as well. There is also it's another one from Paso Cares. There's Echo. So the only two permanent shelters in the county are the Maxine Lewis and Echo in North County. All the rest of these are on an as-needed basis or a rotational basis and are all volunteer. So the only one during these recent storms that hit capacity was one of the Paso Cares in North County. So the rest of them hadn't hit capacity yet. The Homeless Services Oversight Council asked the Board of Supervisors to declare a state of emergency or a shelter crisis, which is pursuant to a government code that allows the county to use any county buildings or land to open that up as a shelter or a warming center. in the event that all these other shelters reach capacity, or it can also be used in event of flooding, things like that. So the Board of Supervisors declared this shelter crisis, and but what happened at the Board of Supervisors meeting is they kind of went a step further. The supervisors directed staff to come back with some more information about the homeless in our county. One of the reasons that these other shelters haven't hit capacity yet is because a lot of them have animals that they can't bring with them, or they can't bring all their belongings because there's not either the space, or they have to leave really early in the morning, they have to take everything with them, and it's not worth it to come in. So the supervisors asked staff to come back with some options for that. I guess in other counties, some shelters have kennels and things like that for their animals. They also set aside $10,000 to help fund if some of these other warming centers or shelters were to open up. There's always a shortage of volunteers, so they allocated $10,000 to some of these nonprofit and religious groups if they need to be paid or hire people to staff, especially overnight, some of these shelters. And then they went a step further than that, and they wrote a letter to every city and asked them to agendize a shelter crisis on their city councils and also contribute $10,000. So there's really not a necessarily a shelter crisis in the way you would think of it. It's more complicated than there not being enough shelters to home these people. So when we break up a shelter, one of the first things we think about, and I know that this is, you know, really hard in Oceana because it's just, you're just kind of shuffling everyone around. They move from one spot to another. So if we can get them services and get them in rapid rehousing or get them to a shelter where they can meet someone who can give them drug or alcohol services or who can, you know, help them apply for a job, then it helps the problem more than just, you know, shuffling them from one part of the creek to the other. So that's kind of what's going on at the county level. The county spends, I have some numbers here, if you like numbers. The county spends almost $1.5 million on homeless, and that's just administering federal grants. And then we also spend another $426,000 on staff for homeless services, and then another $334,000 to homeless serving programs like Five Cities Homeless Coalition and things like that. What Supervisor Compton and I have noticed is probably the biggest problem in South County is that the homeless are not going to go into San Luis to go to a shelter. It's not going to happen. And so I know there's been talk for years that we need a shelter down in South County, and I think that's why it was good that the supervisors asked the cities as well to join them in declaring a crisis and contributing some money too. So we're hoping that we can work together with some of the cities in the future on actually having a shelter down here. So not down here necessarily in Oceano, but down here in South County. So, yeah. Karen,
well, do you have a question? Say, when you get done, I have a question.
Okay, yeah, I think that's really it from me. We have not heard back from any of the cities yet. We heard that it was on Paso City Council's agenda, and I think Morro Bay is going to agendize it as well. I'm waiting to hear if we hear back from Grover or Pismo or Rio Grande. Yeah, any questions?
Karen?
Yeah, I have a question. The county has that perfectly good Grover Beach County Court, the courthouse complex, that's totally empty, and it's been empty for 5-6 years. I know they did some restoration on it. It's just sitting right there in the middle of Grover Beach. Why isn't that being used in some way to aid the homeless? It's just empty buildings, parking lots, room, plenty of room. Do you have any idea why?
No, I don't.
I was told that they are using that periodically when it's raining and that type of thing.
Oh, they're using the social services office on Grand.
I thought it was a courtroom, where the old courtroom was.
Oh. You got to speak up, Lori.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that there's no talk of using that as like a permanent shelter. So I think that's a good idea. I can look into that.
Yeah, and I was told by a very good source that most of our homeless have moved into what would be called Pismo Lake over would be just south of the shopping center that includes California Fresh Markets, and they estimate there's 200 people in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about the challenge of it's a lifestyle choice, and these people don't want housing, they don't want help, they just...
And that's what I've been in touch with, all these different groups that serve the homeless, and the homeless in South County is a little bit of a different group, and as you know, we have such a great climate here normally that we have such a high percentage of homeless, but some of the homeless that we have come across in South County, especially in Oceano, are not your typical homeless that maybe we have in San Luis Obispo. There's a lot of addicts. I mean, it's a very difficult group to serve or to get into treatment. So, that yeah, it's a big challenge here for South County.
Matt, do you have any questions?
I do. Thank you, Jocelyn, for coming. I really appreciate it. How many beds are available countywide versus our homeless population? You said we only had one fill up.
Right. You know, I'd have to add them up real quick here, but I can tell you the numbers if you'll bear with me for a minute.
Thank you.
Five cities can accommodate 30 to 20. They can accommodate 20 at the social services, at the DSS building. And then Prado Day Center, 30 to 40. That will go up. Right now, they're only contracted to open 14 nights out of the year, and so we're going to look into that contract and see if we can expand that. And then some of these other churches, I would say combined, maybe another 60. Not very many. What does that bring us to? Maybe a little over 100?
120.
Yeah, 120.
Yeah. It's not a lot of beds. Do you know anything about what happened with the homeless that were moved from the Grover train station up to Pismo? Do we know? I know they got like a week's camping, and I'm sure that's expired by now. Do you know what's happened with those? With that population?
You know, I don't think it has. I think they have one more week.
Do they? Okay.
Yeah. But they have to have 2 weeks in between.
Okay.
So they can't just, you know, like from what I understand, it's been paid for by one of the groups, but they can't just pay for another 2 weeks. They have to leave for 2 weeks and come back, and it's hard on the campground.
And so we'll wait and see where they end up.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Jocelyn, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
I was just curious if you had the specific numbers for the five cities. How many beds there were?
That's 20.
It was 20. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Missed that earlier.
It says they're quickly looking to expand to 30 or 40. I don't know what that means. That must be somewhere at the same site. But right now it's just 20.
Thank you.
And that's just when it's raining or very cold.
Yeah.
And that's clear up in Arroyo Grande.
Yeah, that's the building on Grand.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Josh and I got a couple of questions for you. Lloyd, do you have any questions?
A couple of statements.
Okay.
I know that they're having a lot of problems with state parks over there because I hear it on the scanner because I monitor the scanner because I do business with the state.
Right.
There has been continued problems. I've had continued problems in Grover Beach, property right off of Grand.
Right.
We've had to put up security cameras. Now I've had to lock the water because they were stealing water off thing and my water bill doubled. Leaving water running just because, and so I've had quite a bit of problem with it, and I have been down to the police department and tried to figure out, is there something we can do to, you know, have a little more monitoring, and some of my other tenants that are there are having problems even in their home area in North Grover, and a couple of them are already looking to try to move out of the area, so unfortunately it's affecting everybody in all different areas.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we had to go to extremes for extra lighting, cameras, everything, because they were plugging into stuff and they blew up some of the light fixtures and that type of thing. So
right.
I understand it is a problem, but I don't know how we're going to take on as many people that we have for this small community.
Right.
There's just no way we can deal with it. And I don't know how the county's going to deal with it either because, you know, there's no way of suppressing it or
right.
treating it. They don't really, the ones that have come in and asked, for things even in my business, they don't want help. They just want something to do or, you know, want you to give them something. And it's been really hard to sit here and watch some of them that I think are struggling and would like to do better, but from what I've seen, the majority don't. They're just here to do whatever they can.
Right.
So it's frustrating on both ends.
Yes.
You can't treat the ones that want to be treated, and you have to deal with the ones that don't.
Right. And I think that just brings it back to the point that it's really going to take a partnership between the cities and the mm-hmm. counties and the nonprofits and religious organizations. It's going to have to really be a group effort from all those. It's not necessarily a government problem because, you know, we are spending a lot of money on
it.
Oh,
yeah.
But I do think South County is unique and that some of those services haven't been fully realized in South County. And so that's what Supervisor Compton and I are working on. And we have heard from particularly business owners in Grover, even though Grover's technically not our district, that has it's just been an ongoing problem. So.
Yeah.
So, well, as poverty does ugly, ugly things to society, and this is just reflective of the poverty in this country, I truly believe that. As people start to lose their homes and families and children and cars, everything starts to deteriorate around them. So, but I'm not happy, but I'm glad to see that people are starting to understand the difference between people who are homeless and transient populations. Mm-hmm. There are migrating populations all over the world. Mm-hmm. Some move seasonally, some, you know, mm-hmm. and in this case, you know, a lot of times we have people, take for example, if you go up into the North County right around fall, mm-hmm. let's just say, you know, when mm-hmm. everything's jumping, every single corner you will see hundreds of young kids looking to harvest marijuana, and they're trimmers, and everybody migrates up the coast and does that, and then they disperse to the warmer areas. So there is a migration pattern, and many people have studied it. But I want to talk to you a little bit about the policies. There were several articles in the national newspaper today saying that it was a waste of money for the federal government to drug test people who are welfare recipients, in that almost 98% of welfare recipients do not use drugs and they tested clean. So part of going into these warming centers, into social services, is that you have to give up a certain part of your civil rights, your right to privacy, you know, and these become barriers to social services. To do a drug test, to do a breathalyzer test, to have a bed that you have to be in at 6 p.m. and you have to be up, packed, and ready to go by 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning is not conducive to the population. You know, when people are living out on the streets and that are transient, that's not how they live. They live through the night and sleep through the day. The majority of them do. It's most dangerous at night. I used to work with a lot of women, and the women would intentionally not wash their hair, intentionally not wash their clothes. They would look as horrifying as possible to protect themselves from rape. And it worked. In most cases, it did protect the women. But to have to treat your body in that way to protect yourself is a sign that some of these policies are huge barriers. To ask people to have ID to go into a shelter, when you run across somebody who is that far off the grid, let's just say, for lack of another term, they're not going to have a piece of IT. And if they do have a piece of ID, you're ahead of the game. You know, now you know who they are, you know, and you can begin to start helping them. You don't know if they have a mental health record. You don't know if they have violence in their records and stuff, but the majority of them are not going to have ID. And to ask for ID is it's once again another barrier.
Animals, too.
Yeah, I have a list. I think the county should, I think one of the best options for the county is to start working with HUD. The policies that they have in place, which are 1.5, does probably come through HUD, the HOPA program, the home program, the block grant money mainly. 1.5 is just unacceptable low amount for the size of this county, and not to mention we just don't have enough permanent housing. But we also have to look at the fact that this county is kind of kind of kicked to the side of affordable housing. You know, this affordable housing and investing in affordable housing is what helps curb these problems. And so as long as we waive fees to developers, as long as we don't ask that a few affordable units be included, whether they're on site of the project or on another site, is not helping the situation, and it's actually impacting everybody's quality of life. So those are just a couple of thoughts that I had, but I really would look up the studies that are coming out today on a waste of money, drug testing and alcohol testing people who are accessing social services, because that's the barrier, that's the main barrier. And there are about 200 people who are not going to tolerate that. They would rather sleep in their tent with their animal in down off of 4th Street than to go through any of that. So you're always going to miss those people.
Right, yeah, and I know there's different schools of thoughts for the different shelters, and some of them are really strict about who they'll accept, and they are more stringent about what they require. Others, some of the religious organizations and things like that, aren't. There's definitely different schools of thoughts on that. I know that workforce housing is extremely important, and Supervisor Compton would probably agree with you that making building less expensive would help affordable housing. But something you said did remind me of one thing I wanted to mention, was that we do have, through the VFW, free day bus passes for veterans. So if mm-hmm. you meet any veterans, but particularly if you meet any veterans in Oceano that are homeless, I can get you a stack of those day passes to hand out. And then if they wanted to, I don't know what they're going to do with it, but if they wanted to, theoretically, they could get it, go into San Luis Obispo to get to one of the shelters.
Right.
Okay. So yeah, that's it. And then I just wanted to thank the Sheriff's Department that has been, I've got eyes and ears down here in Oceano, and my phone probably rings weekly with, oh, there's an encampment on the levee. There's an encampment by the Sand District, that, you know, and I call the Sheriff's Department, and they do what they need to do and go through the process of what they need to do to get that cleaned out. And the Public Works Department has been great too, because they'll come down with some folks or even with some Honor Farm folks and clean up the trash that's left. And so I do think if we continue to be really vigilant with it, that I do think we can, you know, curb it in some ways, and then work on, like I said, working with the cities and the nonprofits and the religious organizations to get, you know, more services down here. I really do think that will help. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and hand it over to
Jocelyn.
You if you want to give a quick update about.
I just wanted to say one other thing,
yeah.
Jocelyn. And the identifying the problem is very simple. Identifying mm-hmm. the solutions is very difficult. And the number of issues that exist exceed the number of people that have the issue, I mm-hmm. think, in a lot of ways. And so I know that this is not a one-size-fits-all type of shoe or analysis.
Right.
The demographics are different, mm-hmm. the addictions, the mental health illness, the number of issues we could spend all night talking about. But I wanted to thank, if you could thank on behalf of the OCSD, Ms. Compton and the Board of Supervisors for coming down and addressing
yeah.
these issues, and the Sheriff's Department for being involved in it. We really do appreciate it. I hear from business owners regularly, not just Mrs. Angelo,
right.
but other business owners
yeah.
as well. And so I do appreciate it if you could
yeah,
communicate that to
them. Yeah, hopefully you all have my number. I know most of you do, at least on my email. You know, if you think of something or if you see a certain issue that needs to be addressed, always feel free to call or email me, because our district is very wide and south all the way to the Santa Maria River. So I do live just up the street. So, and I'm down here, I would say, at least every week. But if for some reason there's something, you know, that hasn't caught my attention, please let me know. So.
Thank you
for being so accessible to us, too. You know,
absolutely.
I'm feeling really good about it, so thank you very much.
Yeah, we're
thank
at the Sheriff's Station every other week in the afternoon for meetings. And you know, compared to the population of Napomo, I thought we would be, you know, we are in Napomo a lot, but we're here a lot too. So, and the other thing that Pavo had asked me was maybe to have the Sheriff's Department come and talk about what you have to do legally to break up a homeless camp, because the homeless have rights as well. And so maybe they can speak to that a little bit.
Thanks.
Thank you,
Jocelyn.
And we won't be offended if you go home now.
Hi. Good evening.
What kind of questions do you have for us?
What's happening down at the levee and by the sanitation district with the homeless encampment?
Right now, there was an encampment by security court that we've gone down and dealt with, cleaned out. We're still waiting for Public Works to go down and start removing the trash, but there are currently no homeless down there. Just like always for us, it's complaint-driven, so we need to know about these places. Sometimes we feel like we're playing whack-a-mole. You know, they pop up here, and as soon as we move them out of this place, they move into someplace else. Our problem is, it's always trespassing is what we're looking at, the illegal stuff. They're going on other people's property. They dig in so deep that it's hard to find them until they've been totally established for 3 or 4 days, and usually the trash starts coming out is what turns us onto it. And as soon as we kick them out of that place, they go somewhere else. We're standing by right now for the 15th, is my understanding, when the free camping stops, and waiting to see where they're all coming from, or where they're all going to end up, because that place where the train station was, once they cleaned that out, as you guys have seen, that was massive.
Well, it's pretty obvious where they've gone.
Yeah, well, right now, most of them are at that campgrounds. So
no, most of them under the 4th Street Bridge.
Under the 4th Street Bridge?
Over 200.
Okay. Well, now you're talking about the lake behind California Fresh and that area?
Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's actually behind the Motel 6.
Okay. Yes, you have to see either Pismo or Grover's.
Grover.
And those, well, I think the other
that's
side.
That's Pismo.
California Fresh is Pismo, correct?
Mm-hmm. It's on the other side of the Grover sign, so therefore it's
Pismo.
Yeah,
and then the Motel 6 would be on Grover's side of it. Yeah.
The Grover sign is here. The camp is down here. Motel 6 is here. This is Pismo.
Yeah. It 4th Street is kind of dividing line right there.
Yeah. I just know the Pismo Police Department, Sarah.
Okay.
That's the only way I can tell.
And, traditionally we've had huge camps out of Price Canyon in that area over the years. I haven't heard of problems out there in a while, but, again, it's one of those things where as we move them out of one location, I won't be surprised if sooner or later we end up back out there again, too. We're trying to stay as vigilant as we can about it. When we find the camps, we go in, we give them notice. We could technically go in and arrest them for trespassing right there and take them away. The problem you have with that is we find they have their tents, their trash, their bikes. They're all left on someone else's property. So we go in and give them their 2 days' notice that we're going to come back and they're going to be arrested if they're not left. And take all the property with them. And usually we find that they do that. They move on. The problem is we've got to find out where they've relocated to. But they take a lot of their trash and their stuff with them. So that helps us to a degree to keep the places a little cleaner. And then when they don't, we move in and move the camps out. We bring roll-offs down here and the honor farmers. And it's a big deal. But, we end up, we get a big camp that's been established for a while, cleaning it all up. But it's ongoing. I mean, it's something that we constantly feel like we're chasing this around town.
Yeah.
I've spoken with quite a few people that are appreciative that the Internet Cafe is no longer servicing that population.
Yes.
And
thank
so,
you.
Yes, there was some appreciation for that as
we actually attacked that with the Gambling Commission.
Right.
We came down here and did a little operation on them, and it turns out it was illegal gambling, and they shut down them all. The one in Napomo, too, which was causing us just as much heartache.
Oh. Right. So if it makes you, I'm not trying to make you feel better, but I used to work on the corner of 6th and Spring in downtown Los Angeles, and I witnessed a death probably on the average every 8 to 10 weeks. And I would have to walk 2 miles of tents on the sidewalk anytime I wanted to go to my favorite Chinese restaurant. So it's nothing compared to what major cities are dealing with.
No, absolutely. We have a different quality of life, I think, up here, too. And, it's for us trying to maintain that and property owners' rights at the same time deal with a very serious problem. That's the homeless and all the things that go along with that, the mental health issues, the drug and alcohol abuse issues.
Humanitarian issues. Legal issues.
Half the problem is finding them, at the time. At least if they were at a centralized location where drug and alcohol, mental health knew where they could locate them, I think that would help immensely, a place to bring aid to them. So,
yeah.
But
I could agree with you. Anybody have any questions for the gentleman? Thanks for coming down today.
No problem.
We really
appreciate
it.
Just please keep in mind, remind people that we need to know about it. So if they know, can't see where they're staying, call us. That's what we need. It's a complaint-driven enforcement for us most of the time.
Okay.
And then we can go out and deal with it if we know where they're at.
Okay. When was it cleaned out by the sanitation plant? Do you know?
I don't.
Okay.
No. I was off for most of the summer with an injury, and I believe a lot of the cleanup happened then. We just recently dealt with the security court area within about 2 weeks ago. We were down there, and we're still waiting for more cleanup to go on, but we've moved any transients out of that area.
We were getting a lot of complaints from, you know, as the water was starting to rise around here, the little footbridge started floating there. And as you crossed over that footbridge, it had turned into quite a mess.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
Is that the area you're speaking about?
Okay. Yeah, one of our senior deputies actually went down and put some waders on the other day and walked around out there to figure out what needs to be done. So.
Great man.
I think we should call this the Sheriff's South Station Report for the agenda. I think that that's what it should be representative, and I appreciate it. I really do.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else I can ask for you guys?
No.
No,
thank you so much. We really appreciate it. We'll keep you informed.
Have a good night. Be safe.
And thank you for responding to Halcyon. We've had a few transients in vehicles decide that that was the perfect place to camp.
Absolutely.
And we've just been calling and appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Well, that was informative.
It was unexpected this evening, but it was very helpful.
Yeah.
And again, I
speak up.
I have much appreciation for the supervisors and the sheriffs in trying to address this issue. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I have to say that this supervisor, we've been very, very fortunate having her in office. She's done a lot of things, from working with the building department to help, you know, Oceano and the homeowners and advocating for local businesses. I'm quite impressed.
Me too.
You know, pleasantly.
Very
so
happy.
Yes. She truly hit the ground running. So, Tony, Mr. Maricino.
Good evening, Board. Tony Maricino. So Lopez is currently at 29%, which is 14,320 acre feet. It's the beginning of the year. We got delivered 50.69 acre feet of state water. We only pumped 0.12 acre feet just for samples, weekly samples. We had no SSOs for January. We had 12 work orders, 8 USAs. 12 customer service calls. We had one call out. There was a little communication barrier between the office staff and the homeowner or renter. They said they had no water. Basically, they had no water at their sink, one sink. And it was due to some debris. The screen had to be taken off, cleaned out, and back to normal. But cellular was off at the time. And there's just a communication barrier, so that's why the call-out happened.
Did you fix it?
Yeah, I got taken care of. We fixed it. But
did you show them how to fix it next time?
Yeah. Call-outs like this, we don't charge for. You know, it's just kind of odd call-outs. You know, maybe something in the future. If something, hey, I have no water, but yes, they do. It's something on their end. Has nothing to do with us. You know, maybe we could talk about a fee in the future or something to that effect, because it does cost the district money for an operator, a truck to go out there after hours. You know, just food for thought, throwing that out at you. Did some weed eating, weed abatement at the yard, well 8. The basin over here off of 13th, where well 8's at. Well 5, we prepped that for abandonment. You need a C-57 license, which is a drilling contractor, has a license for that. So we got an initial bid just over the phone, and it's $12,000 to $15,000 because of the pad that was there. It's a really big pad, really thick. So we took the initiative to demo that, prep it all, and it took us about 3 days to get everything out of there. We had to get an excavator and a jackhammer on it. So I'm waiting on the new proposal, since we did the majority of the work. So that would drastically cut the the cost down.
Good job.
We had a fire hydrant, 22nd and Beach, get hit. And as you've noticed, all the lighting got changed in Oceano to LEDs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's the gentleman who hit our hydrant. Yeah.
So he's going to waive his bill for them? Just kidding.
So they changed out the lighting on 22nd Beach. It was almost 4 o'clock on Friday. And as he left the area, it's an empty lot. The only two things there is the light pole and the hydrant. He got a hold of our hydrant. So that's all been taken care of. It's been paid for. We got a hydrant on order.
Sure.
Should be here within the next few weeks.
It's an accident.
It is. Yeah. It happens.
You can borrow this one right out here.
Yeah, there's one in the parking lot.
That pretty much covers it. We did a lot of hydrant maintenance. As we're going through the hydrants, you'll see them. They get a little brighter, a little nicer. Repainted valve stems, checked isolation valve.
All right.
You know, anti-seize everything. Make sure it's operating correctly.
I think we'll await your lead, Tony. But I think we've got some extra equipment at the yard. If you want to ever bring up surplusing some of that, we'll await your lead. But
oh, absolutely. There's going to be items here in the near future. Once I speak with the general manager about surplusing items that we have that we no longer need or can't use. Another thing that happened today, we had an APCD inspection. Everything went really well. I got the email back from him. He was really happy with our record keeping, everything like that. Last year I explained to you, we have a jackhammer system. It's a pneumatic, and it's a trailer. Mm-hmm. Now this is a tier zero item. Basically, it cannot be used after 2016. Mm-hmm. There is an
exception. Because of the emissions?
Yes.
Okay.
There is an exception. You will end up getting a notice of a violation. You basically respond back to it before you get it. I've already discussed. You explain to them you only use it approximately 5 to 10 hours a year, and which we do just for bigger jobs. You can actually keep it as long as you stay within a certain
hour limit
per year, even though you'll still get a notice of violation for it. So that's a way to keep a piece of equipment that is still in great working order. It's just not up to compliance with APCD. And I don't believe we need to go out and buy another one. I haven't priced them, but just by looking at it, $10,000-$15,000. You know. But that'll be down the road. We're discussing that with the GM.
Great.
Yes.
And I'm sure he'll keep us informed.
Absolutely.
Do you have a question, Ray?
No, not at all. That sounds good, saving money.
Jen? Karen?
Yeah. And I've taken care of this specific problem, but I noticed that on my corner, the fire hydrant, the weeds are at the top of the fire hydrant. And I made arrangements for it to get the weeds to get cut down, but is that a responsibility of who?
See, if it's on a property owner, owns that property, they're supposed to maintain a 3-foot clearance.
Okay.
Of that fire hydrant.
Okay.
So fire department can access it. They can see it visually.
Yeah, well, that was...
Yes.
It was disappearing. It was kind of like the one at Strand and Juanita that disappears in the sand all the time.
The one at Strand and Juanita is kind of unique just because of the location. It's not right on somebody's property, even though each piece of property is supposed to own half and half. That's a unique one.
I suspect this one is on, actually, County Road.
Okay.
But... Helsing's taking care of it, but I just wondered, are there others where you...
I mean, there is others.
But I mean, it's the home property owner's responsibility to clear around the hydrants is what I'm trying to find out.
Yes.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Then we'll notify them. If they don't, then we'll take another course of action.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
Karen, is there anything to report on fire?
Not at this time, no.
Okay. All right. Matt, let's start with you.
Sure.
Under Board of Directors and Outside Committee Reports, if nobody minds.
The meeting that I attended was last Wednesday. That was February 3rd. The South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. I think the thing that caught most people's attention, or was paid attention to the most, probably a better way of putting it, was the presentation by John Wallace, item number 2 on the agenda. This allowed Mr. Wallace the opportunity to address the Knudsen report that was received and filed. It was not adopted by the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District. It was received and filed by the Sanitation District 2 weeks prior. And after that receipt and filing, there was a direction from the board to staff to forward that report to the law enforcement agencies. So John Wallace did come and make a presentation. We then heard from, it was 23 or 24, I have the notes from it, I didn't bring them in, concerned members of the community. There were a significant number of people that spoke on each side of the issue, some in support of Mr. Wallace, some in support of the Knudsen report and the findings that were contained therein. Mr. Wallace then, I understand, also wrote a opinion, not opinion piece, maybe it is an opinion piece. He wrote a commentary that was relayed in the newspaper a few days after that that summarizes his position. A couple of items, he made a presentation, basically said that they provided a good value to the district during their 27 years and that we can disagree as to the value of those particular services. I didn't note that he any specific denials of any of the allegations contained in the alleged allegations. Thank you, Mary. Alleged allegations contained in the Knudsen report, other than to say that he did not commit malfeasance. So it was a hearty meeting. It was a well attended meeting, literally standing room only. And so I'm happy that it's over. I would like to see the board. You know, we went through a healing process in 2013, and Patricia Price, who comes to our meetings and has been to every one probably since 2012, spoke to it a year or so ago, that the healing process that had started in 2013 when we brought on Paul Karp, brought on new staff and management. And so I really hope that the Sanitation District can get back to that healing that was being done, and that we can move away from drama and move away from disputes that are unnecessary. So we then had we moved on. We received that report. I asked that the slides that were shown by Mr. Wallace be attached to the minutes. We have attached the reports, and my interest in doing so is that there'd be a complete record for the public for now and for in the future. We had a pipeline repair contract that was approved. There was some concern that was brought up by the board that the contracts, there were only two bids that were received. There was some concern by the board that those were not presented to the board. We did receive those later, and I think this is, we did instruct the interim district administrator, we need to see these contracts because I think that's best practices. And now having seen those contracts, the board action has already happened. It raised more questions. And so I would like, and we've directed staff that if the board's going to make policy decisions, we need to have the information in front of us.
Yes, because
we need to have the information in front of us if we're going to make these policy decisions.
Was that released out to RFP?
No. No, they went.
So if we're going to work on not duplicating past poor practices, when does that start?
Well, it should have already started.
Because the last two times, and I'm sure, you know, interim general manager will correct me, but was that not the second time a contract has just been solicited and approved? I mean, I think, you know, when do we start releasing taxpayers' funds in the responsible way? My understanding is no contract over $25,000 can of taxpayers' money can be released unless it's in an RFP or an RFQ process, and that the protocol is followed, and And so maybe you can talk to me a little bit more about that. So
what I
don't get nervous.
Sure. What I can say is that I have heard the criticism and the concerns, and my intention, very similar to what we had here a couple of years ago when we weren't getting staff reports, my intention then became pull that item. If there's no staff report, pull that item. And I think that's the approach that we're going to have to take. Here, and I think it's just best practices, if you don't have the bids in front of you, if you don't have multiple bids, I think that what we're going to need to do, and any organization should do, I'm not singling out the sanitation district, although we saw this last week, what any organization should do is pull that so that the board can make an informed decision, and I think that that's part of the growing process and the lesson for us all as board members in South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District as board members, is to make sure that we have the information in front of us to make the best decision for the ratepayers.
That's right. I wholeheartedly agree.
And here.
The best decision.
And here. We've run into this as well here as well and have addressed that. I don't know. I think Ms. Blackburn reminded me at one point that if there's not a staff report, we're pulling it. And there was a staff report for that one, but we didn't have the bids. So.
Okay, and then a couple other questions I have where are we on the general manager search?
So we did a closed session. There was an announcement out of closed session, and I wish I could remember the language. I don't want to misquote it and violate closed session, but there was a discussion regarding it, and the general manager search is proceeding well.
Was it released? Did the headhunter do that? Did you see what was released? Or?
Oh, now you got me on the spot. There was a it was put out. I believe it was publicized. It was put in the special district's publication that they have. And requests for applications, it was up on the website, and the requests for applications were put out and advertised that way. I don't recall the number of applications that we got. I believe that it was a number, though.
I remember that the sanitation district hired a headhunter firm to search for an executive candidates, and we spent
I don't remember the amount, the price. $30,000 or something. I don't remember the
yes.
amount.
Yes, okay, that's fine.
Might have been $20,000.
My understanding is that there would be a brochure describing the sanitation district jobs descriptions, and please to submit.
There was.
Did you ever see that?
Yes, I did see that, and I reviewed it. I was approached by somebody who ended up not applying, but that person and I went through the, and I had seen it prior also, but we went through it with the questions that they had.
Okay. Anybody else have any questions? Because I had one more and I...
No.
So hopefully we'll have some news to share on that.
Okay. And you have one thing, more thing in the hopper. What is it? Come on.
Well, I'm not having a new kid. You're scaring me. I didn't buy a new house.
What? Okay, so did you do your goals for this year? That I'm trying to figure out how we're going to get the train back on the tracks.
No. So the last meeting, so that was it. We heard from Wallace. We didn't know how long that was going to take. It did take a significant amount of time. By the time we heard public comment, by the time Wallace finished speaking. It went very well. The members of the public were some very impassioned about it, and understandably so.
So I'm wondering. Okay, so we've gotten through this, right?
Right.
So now back to the task at hand, which is processing. Waste in the most
sure.
environmentally harmful way we possibly can. And so...
We are moving forward. The redundancy project is moving forward. The plant numbers, I should say, have been coming down a bit. They went from 40...
That's it.
They went from 40, which was our discharge permit. That was our cutoff. They went from a 40 in December, and they went down to, I think it was a 32, or I think it was for the BODs. And okay. So those numbers have been coming down. I was able to speak with Mr. Clemens about it, and one of the situations with the plant is they're still learning the plant as well. There was not a good O&M manuals that came from prior administrative practices. There's not the institutional memory. Remember, we have 7 of 10 or 6 of 10. Most of the employees and management have been changed, and so they're still figuring out the plan. And one of the things that was affecting plant operation was temperature. And so when you have a biological plant and bugs, for example, that help process the influent, temperature can have a big effect on that. And so they were learning how, because there's not the institutional memory, how to work with that and how to bring those numbers down. And that's why we do see the numbers come down by 8 points in January. Obviously, we'd like to see them get as low as possible, so we're turning out the cleanest effluent that we can. But that's where that's at.
Okay, great. So you're going to stay on the number?
Yeah, I'll stay on that. And so I appreciated staff letting us know that. Letting me know, this was a private meeting, that was what was happening, and that was the reason behind it. So,
thank you.
Yes,
very much. I'm glad to hear the good news coming from the sanitation district. Karen, do you have any other reports you'd like to report on?
I did attend Zone 3 Tech on Thursday, February 4th. Two matters that we had already took action on approving the Stormwater Resource Planning Act grant application work is moving forward, and also the Meadow Creek Culvert Project, which involved $30,000 of Zone 3 money, they're both moving forward.
Great.
And there was a great discussion, and finally was supported by the entire tech group. The culvert, of course, was kind of backwards because Zone 3 approved it before the tech approved it, but it was approved.
Great.
And the Habitat Conservation Project, it continues, and Tony already gave the report on the water from the dam. It should be noted there has been very little inflow from the dam from the rains. And the thing is, they say that the ground is still absorbing the water. And, of course, now it's quit raining, so it's really not having any inflow. Mm. So, okay. Well, the state water allocation is 15%, but that could change in March. Yeah.
One thing I think Mary and I were able to witness, I think it was January 29th, I was just looking at the calendar, the county went out with large equipment. Mary, do you want to describe what was happening out there?
Sure, I'll do it.
Yeah. Mary called me and got me down there, and we took some pictures, and it was really...
I think I vaguely described it last time, but I'll do it again. Is Linda Guyton and myself and Supervisor Compton and with Tony's help and everything had been watching certain areas of the lagoon, the water rising. I kept going to the island. The water had washed over into about halfway on Aloha. So Willow Creek, when you stepped over the ditch, you sunk to your waist. You literally sunk. And so, and Linda, being born and raised here, had said, look, it's not if, it's when is it going to flood. There's not enough room. And the drainage right outside her, used to be her bedroom, now it's her office, was increasing. And Tony had been watching that area very closely. I think everybody was mm-hmm. watching that culvert right there. And so Zone 11A, Salmon Enhancement, and the county of Public Works had worked very, very hard to have emergency permits on hand in file, so when we did run an emergency, we could move things through the governmental system swiftly. And I have to tell you, I was very much impressed. when they realized that no, it was going to flood, and then it would probably flood at least at a minimum 40 homes in Oceano. The director of Public Works took the initiative, and Supervisor Compton, and pulled those emergency prints and sent them to the state of California. Dina from Parks and Recs was swift, very, very quick in spinning those signatures around and getting the proper permits to get onto the beach quickly. And I think everything happened within 48 hours, which is wonderful. Amazing for probably five governmental entities to work in harmony and get that done. But the prep work of having those emergency prints on file, it was life-saving. It truly was life-saving for Oceano, and I just have to commend the county for doing that. I'm not impressed very often, but I have to tell you I was impressed on this one. So at 8 o'clock in the morning, Matt Guerrero and I and others
bunch of local citizens
trotted down the beach to, well, he walked, I drove.
she told me it was right there.
Down to,
half a mile
I think
later.
It was marker one or two.
Each way.
You know, marker two, and not close behind us was the backhoes, the big people mover backhoes, which all my brothers and everybody called me wanting to drive it. But you don't know how many requests I got. Hey, can I drive that thing? When I posted on it. But they gently dredged out where the sandbar usually breaks during the winter. The sandbar breaks and everybody comes into town to drive through the creek and dump their trucks upside down in the creek and stuff. And some of us go, oh, that's so horrible. But the reality is it's kind of keeping that sandbar in check and letting and releasing that water. So it may look like an environmentally horrible thing, but kind of helps, you know. And I'll probably get in trouble for saying that, but it's true.
Well, it's to protect from flooding, and so I appreciate the county's efforts. And when we were talking to them, the gentleman who worked for the county that was running the backhoe or flagging the back, well, flagman for the backhoe, I think he said he'd been here 24 years or 31 years, and he doesn't remember ever having done it before.
The last person who ever did that was Mr. Harold Guyton. May he rest in peace. And I have to tell you, when we were going through all that and getting those permits and everything, Mr. Guyton kept coming to mind. He kept coming to mind because he knew it's not if it floods, when it floods. And so Karen knows he would get his tractor out there and he would ever so gently clear a path for the water.
Pilot hole, make a pilot hole for the, for the sandbar.
Did whatever he needed to do to make sure the town didn't flood. And so there has been a lot of sand and soot buildup since then. I was down yesterday, believe it or not, when they did this in Avila. My understanding is it had to be dredged twice. I went down there yesterday to check it out, and we're still flowing 3 to 4 feet wide and at a very nice, pleasant trickle. And there was somebody in the creek moving the sand around ever so gently, too. But it wasn't so much the salmon that we were concerned about harming or the trout, because they had, they're up in the lagoon and stuff just cooking, and they would really like to get out of there, you know, and go on to be adults, where the little, what are the little
saltwater gobies?
Saltwater gobies were the fish that we were concerned about. And so by gently dredging it, it didn't create a strong current that just drug these little creatures out. You know, they were able to do their thing without being harmed, and there was constant sampling and tests being done all the way through it, and nobody ever spotted one, and none were seen, but they are up in those pools, and within, I think, 36 hours, the lagoon started to drop, so
that's good.
Yeah, it was nerve-wracking, but it was very fulfilling, too. I was glad to be part of it.
Yeah, that was January 29th, so thank you, Mary.
Yeah.
One interesting factor on that is one of the fact that earlier the high tides earlier had washed some salt water into that lagoon, so that allowed the animals who to be told that they were going to change from fresh water to salt water, and that early shifting of the water is important to help them so that later, even in opening the sandbar artificially, they had the same kind of effect they would have if it was opened naturally.
Yes, that's right.
That was part
like
of the
a brackish section.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was interesting. So,
I applaud the county for the flood control efforts in it,
and the work in the sandbar management that Zone 118 paid for.
Yeah, I was
the efforts of Zone 118 to get that studied.
Thank you.
Yeah, that sandbar management. Yeah, it was one for the people, most definitely. Okay, so then I'm just going to keep going down the list. I attended the Water Resource Advisory Committee last Wednesday. One of my favorite committees. There's a lot of open discussion, a lot of dialogue with some really great people, and that's really why I like that committee so much. They did do the similar things that Tony had talked about, where we were on the reserve Lopez and stuff like that. So there was some pretty extensive updates on the North County and the creation of the new special water district up there. And then also too is last time the board gave me a vote of confidence to apply for the LAFCO board through the CSDA body, and so that paperwork was put in, and then I submitted a one-page bio. So it's a tough field. It's a hard group, but they're all really great people, and so that will be happening on the 19th at Avila Community Center. So, Jen, you want to go with me?
Excuse me, check the calendar.
Okay. It's barbecue.
She'll pass.
Another barbecue.
Okay.
Barbecue portobellos, what are we talking about?
And then also I want to remind people that the California Coastal Commission is in Morro Bay for today, tomorrow, and Friday. Today, I watched it all day long. And tomorrow, first of all, you can get it online live. So if you can't get down there, but I'm going to try to go down tomorrow. It's been a very fascinating day on that front. So if anybody's interested in the California Coastal Commission.
Ready, set, go. Okay. On January 21st, I did attend with Mr. Ogren the state water meeting, where they let us know that the delivery for 2016 would be 10%, but as Vice President White did inform us, it was increased to 15% for most of the recipients. They're going to be working on creating a subcommittee for the bigger state water project issues, including the possibility of the Paso District possibly utilizing state water. It's one of the options that they're looking at for their supplemental water, but there would be a lot of contract issues that would need to be looked at in that process, so they're going to be moving forward in trying to figure out how they would continue to move forward.
Would that I'm sorry to interrupt you, would that impact, since San Luis Obispo County receives all the state water, and then our allocations come through their allocations, which that's why Oceano and Pismo always get their full allocations.
Yeah.
Would it impact ours, because they use so much more water than the other state purveyors, so would there be an impact? We get 25,000 acre feet county wide.
Right. And even when the deliveries are at a low 10 or 15%, we usually can get our full allotment.
We always do. Yeah.
But, yes, this might impact that, which is why they're creating a subcommittee to discuss it, how we would move forward with that. And in what way they would be paying, because the other state water contractors have been paying for the project, you know, for a really long time. So
yes, that's going to be very interesting.
Yeah.
You'll keep us posted on that?
Yes.
Great.
And that meets quarterly, so it'll...
The IRWM meets?
No, the state water.
Oh,
I believe that's what it is. So it'll be a little while.
Okay.
As they work on some things.
All right.
I also attended the Regional Water Quality Control Board on January 28th. It was a light agenda. Just two of the main things that they talked about were the cannabis pilot project, where they are trying to work on waivers in certain areas, the North Coast and Central Valley regions, to protect the water quality in areas where there are more marijuana grows. So they said that they've had a really good response from that, and they are seeing a lot of practices change. And a lot of what they're trying to do is get out best management practices to the groups that are doing the growing.
So the mega gardens that are using a lot of water, they're talking them into using less water on their leafy green plant.
Yeah, and they're making sure that they are not diverting water illegally, and so that they are keeping the waters clean when they are using it. And I believe that part of it is that they are checking to make sure that they have that right to the water, but also just making sure that the unauthorized grading and excavation, they're making roads through rivers and streams. There's a lot of sediment that's going in there and some fertilizers.
Yes.
So, but they said that it's been a good project so far, and that it's very possible that San Luis County would be the next, or our region would be the next area that they try to utilize that pilot project. So,
good.
But that's they're going to be discussing it, but that was a possibility.
That's great.
Yeah. And then the other thing they talked about was budget priorities. They were just talking about how they continued to absorb increasingly complex and greater workloads, but they're still trying to make sure that they focus on the important, the priority projects that are coming through and still helping the little guys out with the things that they need help with. So,
great.
Yeah. My third, I know, I'm sorry, I have three of them today.
No, don't apologize.
Was the Regional Water Management Group for the Integrated Regional Water Management Group. there are actually some things that we may talk about as with our board, because they're, and I think I brought this up in the past, but with the Prop 1 grant funding that's coming with the IRWM grant funds, they've been getting together with the other funding, the other areas in our funding area, the other regions in our funding area, to try to split up the money ahead of time for our region, sorry, for our funding area. We're going to talk about it more later.
But the regions are more than just San Luis. It's multiple counties, correct?
Yeah, it is. It includes parts of Monterey County, Monterey Peninsula, Santa Barbara County, yeah, and part of Ventura County.
Okay.
I don't know that I listed all of them there, but those are some of them. And they're talking about splitting up the money ahead of time so that we would just, so that then in our county, we would just be vying for a set amount of money that our county is getting, and instead of having to go against the other area, the other counties.
Right.
So we are going to have to vote on whether or not we want to participate in that when that agreement is finalized, and so I just want to make sure that I have your support, or that I don't have your support before I do that. And a big part of that proposition, that grant funding is for the disadvantaged communities, like an involvement aspect of it, and they're creating a subcommittee for disadvantaged communities. So but we have to do it as the entire funding area. And so there's somebody that's setting it up in Santa Cruz that would like to lead it, and if we are interested in getting involved, then we can do that. So I'm going to talk to Mr. Ogren and see if that's something that would be helpful for us or not in the projects that we have coming up. But in general, the group, it's really great because we're, I think, trying to find the common themes across the county and in all of our different subregions and highlight those common themes so that we can work together. But our next meeting is going to focus on outreach, getting out to the common folk what the IRWM is and how it is useful for our towns.
And Carolyn Berg is your primary coordinator on that, correct?
I don't believe that she is anymore. Vladin Bandov, I believe is his last name, has been stepping up as the leadership in that. But I do see Carolyn every now and then, and Courtney was there at the last meeting.
Yeah, so. Because there was a discussion around getting a letter of support from RAC, and he stood up and said, oh, it's too late.
Oh, for letter of support for what?
For the IRWM measure, Prop 1 money.
Are you talking about this for the stormwater?
Yes.
Yes, for the stormwater plan. So the county, I think, is not going to step up as a lead agency, but the regional water management group did vote to send a letter of support for the AG Creek watershed.
Okay. All right, very good.
Stormwater plan. So that is the end of my report.
Thanks. Ms. Angelo.
Short and sweet. I met with the revitalization group this last week and kind of went over the scope of what we're looking at and making suggestions on maybe we should rearrange some of the items that would be better done earlier than later for funding issues and just general moving forward after that instead of having a little here, a little there, and then coming back and filling in, trying to make it more of a reliable continuance of development and change and improvement. And that was it.
Great.
I have one thing to add. I forgot. I'm sorry.
No, don't apologize.
Are you done, Lori?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So after the Wallace presentation on Monday, the board got forwarded a addendum that Carl Knudsen wrote to his particular report.
That posted?
I don't know. It was forwarded to the board by plant staff, and so.
When was that forwarded?
Monday. That was forwarded. I just checked my email. That was forwarded on Monday. Okay. So I don't know if anybody else has seen it, but the board has received it. So.
No.
And I have one more.
Yes, Karen.
I was one of three members of the Oceano Advisory Committee that met with Democratic State Senator Bill Monning, who is our state senator, in Oceano. He came to visit for an hour, and one of the things we talked about was Front Street revitalization.
Yay.
And we talked about funding and grants, and he assured us that to contact him anytime that we felt we could use his support, and he would be happy to support us with letter writing and various things. It was a very nice meeting, and I appreciated the fact that he found Oceano.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's clear up in Carmel. Yeah. You know, we're kind of at the far reaches of his district.
He's a very nice man.
He's a very, very nice man. And he took cards and he took the brochures on the revitalization and on the Roy Grindy Creek flooding. We talked about that.
That's good.
And he was very interesting. His staff person also was. And I thought it was a very good meeting.
Mm-hmm. What was his last name?
Monning.
Monning.
He's our local representative. He's the Senate Majority Leader.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe if you have a relationship with him, maybe at some point we can have a town hall meeting where others could come and talk to him and meet with him.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
I was invited. I don't know the circumstances.
No, I'm just saying, since you have that relationship now, I think it would be great to have meet and greet with our assembly people. Yeah. There's one other comment I needed to make, too, is that on the street lighting, I know a lot of people are now experiencing new light bulbs and making some places look like you're at the stadium. Others are happy to have a little bit of light. I'm one of the stadium folks. So I'm telling you, I'm waiting for a football game to start or something when those lights go on. So, but you can contact, I think it's Miller, Nicole Miller, you can contact me. I'll give you Nicole's number, who is the coordinator and is working with PG&E. I was able to get an amber shade put on to my LED lighting to calm it down some, because it truly works. So for anybody else who's got new LED lighting that's, you know, you're waiting for the game to start.
Yeah, the football season's over, right? So,
but the bad side of it is that you have to pay for that amber shade. The good side of it is you'll sleep that night. But I'm just glad to have some good lighting, and so I do know that they are rewiring Oceano's historical posts. All 10 of them.
Oh, good.
So,
my wife has been complaining to me about those, so that'll be nice if they're fixed.
Yeah, you know, my wife complained to me, too.
Did you get the same response?
It ain't me. What's going on?
I'll call it in.
No, I got complained it was too bright.
Oh, okay.
Okay, great. Mr. Minnery, do you have anything that you'd like to contribute, or did you go to any committee meetings? Were you allowed to talk to anybody?
I did not. I have nothing to report, but thank you for asking.
Okay, so at this time, I'll take some public comment on anything that was discussed. I'm so hearing none. I'm going to close this item, and if we dare... does anybody have any future agenda items that they wish for to show up? And then you'll announce your...
No, I'm wondering if you wanted to go to the consent agenda first.
Oh, gosh.
And
you always got to spend that
She was so excited about committee
For the benefit...
Celia wants her bills paid, so...
Okay, so let's work into the bills, and let's just do the minutes first.
All right. I'll move to approve the minutes, item A and B.
I'm sorry, Director Guerrero. Just to be clear for the folks at home, there is no one in the audience tonight to
have public
comment on this item. So,
yeah, we're holding back the crowds.
I have a comment on the January 13th.
Yes.
Minute. And I will let you know what my changes are, and if you guys would like to discuss and remove them from the consent agenda, I would be
happy. we can make a motion and then have discussion, right, Jeff?
No.
Okay, wait a minute.
You can do it either way. If Director Blackburn has a few just clerical corrections on it, and as long as it's not doesn't create an issue of discussion, the board can still adopt the consent agenda as amended without any issue. So
you need a second for your motion. I will second that, and we can discuss.
All right, discussion.
For business item 8A on the second page, where in action it says a second motion was made to nominate President Lucy as chair for LAFCO. I just wanted to clarify that we were nominating President Lucy for the election to the special district member seat on LAFCO. It wasn't chair of LAFCO.
No.
I just wanted to make sure
Thank
that
you.
We... Yeah, no problem. And then the other one was on item 8B, the nomination for me as chair of the Pismo Beach Regional Groundwater Sustainability Project. It was only as appointee to that that project. So
right.
I just wanted to change those two things so that we can make it more clear for the record.
Okay.
But if no one has any disagreements.
None. I'm really glad you caught that. was it, did we capture everybody who spoke under public comment?
On the 13th, yes. It was the 27th where we had more public comment, so I think maybe that's what you're thinking.
Okay. So, I'll, does anybody have any comments for the 27th? None? Okay. Any comments for the expenditures? Questions? Okay. I'll entertain a motion to accept the consent agenda, with the outlined changes that Jennifer Blackburn pointed out.
Sure. I think we already have a motion and a second.
Who made the motion?
I made the motion. I think Ms. Director Blackburn seconded it.
Yes,
as to
right.
A and B. We hadn't addressed the warrants yet.
Are we going to address them all at one time or not?
I thought we were going to... You want to split? You want to split this up?
Well, I did. I think, and it was because I misunderstood Ms. Blackburn.
Since there's already been a motion and a second, why don't we have the board vote on those items?
I'll handle it. Okay.
So
the motion is to accept the minutes for January 13th with the corrections. Correct.
Yes. Correct.
Do I hear a second?
Yes.
Jim. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay,
aye.
Opposed? It passes. I'll entertain a motion to accept the remainder of the consent agenda, including the warrants and the minutes from January 27th.
I'll make a motion.
I second.
Okay, Director Angelo first, Director White seconded. Okay, any discussion? None? Hearing none? Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? It passes. All right. Okay. So, any written communications? None? No complaints? Oh, one? Okay. And then, nothing late received communications? None? Hearing none? Celia? No written communications? Okay. Hearing items, none. Mr. Minery, number 12 is you.
Okay.
And once again, I just want to say the reason why we're not doing public comment is because we don't have anybody from the public here tonight. So it's not that we're ignoring anybody, it's just that there is nobody.
And with that said, the board will adjourn to closed session pursuant to Government Code 54956.9E3. This is conference with legal counsel regarding the receipt of a claim pursuant to the Government Claims Act. There is one case to be discussed.
Okay.
Okay. Would you sign this?
Yes. Please. Okay, we're coming back from closed session. Before Mr. Minery, oh, please do report first.
Okay, reporting out of closed session, the board has directed staff to negotiate the claim with the claimant.
Okay, great. I have one announcement. Does anybody else have any announcement they'd like to make? Okay, the Oceano Depot, which is... held pancake breakfasts to support the Kiwanis Club and the work around Oceano for lots of years is having pancake breakfast Sunday morning. This Sunday, since it's Valentine's Day weekend, the pancakes will be shaped in hearts. And so it will be Valentine's Pancake Breakfast Sunday. So everybody, please show up. It's a great event. It's kind of like a town hall meeting. People just come in and get their coffee and their food, and they visit with their neighbors and their friends that they haven't seen for a while. And it's really a nice, nice event. Karen volunteers all the time. Matt brings the family down. So they could put syrup all over those tables versus his table at home.
Those kids are professional.
Lori's
eaters.
Always there drinking coffee with me. Jen slides in with the boys, points them in their right direction, and gets her orange juice. So
what time does it start?
I think it starts at 8.
I'm thinking 8, too.
I'm thinking 8 o'clock, and there's sausage and scrambled eggs and pancakes and fresh fruit and orange juice, and it's just really, really a nice event in a nice place. So we
tickets
encourage
at the door.
Everybody to come. Tickets at the door, they're $5, all you can eat, and come in, hang out with the town. So on that note, everybody have a wonderful week, and we'll see you in the following week.
Thank you.